everybody. Welcome back to the Biographics Podcast. I'm Simon, and this episode today originally aired on our YouTube channel. If you like it, please do consider heading over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leaving us a rating and or a review. 5 stars or whatever is always preferred, but do be honest. Let us know how we're doing. Really do appreciate it. And let's get into today's episode. 27 people. They were boys, with their cars, summer jobs. Oh my God, are you one of them? He dressed up like a clown for them, with his face painted white and red. And on his best behavior in a dark room on the bed, he'd kill them all with the sleight of his hand, running far, running fast to the dead. Those are the lyrics from a song titled John Wayne Gacy Jr. by Sufjan Stevens. It is just one of the countless pieces of art that have been inspired by this terrifying serial killer. John Wayne Gacy was a businessman and a politician. To everyone around him, he was a sweet and charming man. No one in his life could have guessed that he dressed up like Pogo the Clown and murdered teenage boys after dark. The Chicago Police Department found 27 bodies buried in his basement. They knew that his kill clown, though, it was at least 33, and there could be more victims that were simply never found. This story became front page news and immediately captivated the nation. The fact that a killer clown truly existed in the world struck fear into the hearts of people everywhere, believing that they could no longer trust circus performers around their children. The story of John Wayne Gacy has inspired writers to create their own versions of killer clowns, including Pennywise from Stephen King, as well as Twisty, the clown in American Horror Story. And in the upcoming 2019 DC Comics film Joker, Joaquin Phoenix portrays the character by copying Pogo the Clown's menacing makeup. So, who was the man behind the face paint? How did he get this way? And why did he go on such a murderous rampage? John Wayne Gacy Jr. was born in Chicago on March 17, 1942. His father, John Stanley Gacy, was a factory worker. John's father was very much a man's man who enjoyed sports and drinking beer. He really wanted a son, and he imagined having a boy to do all of the traditional father-son activities together with. His mother, Marion, was a housewife who was very sweet and loving to her children. John and Marion named their baby John Jr. and gave him the middle name Wayne so that he could be named after the manly cowboy actor John Wayne. Growing up, the family called him Johnny. John Sr. was a very strict disciplinarian and a raging alcoholic. Because of his outbursts, Johnny spent more time with his mother and sisters. John Sr. tried to play sports with him in the backyard and go on weekend fishing trips, but the boy was never really very interested. He preferred to plant flowers, cook, and do traditionally feminine activities. His father was extremely disappointed in Johnny, so he constantly called him a sissy. He asked him if he was trying to be a girl and forbid him from doing the hobbies that he actually enjoyed. Johnny's mother would spoil him with food in an attempt to make up for his father's abuse, and he became overweight. His parents were constantly arguing, and it would often escalate into fights. When his father drank, he would beat Johnny and his sisters with a leather and razor strap. For many years, the children would cry out in pain, but one day, during a particularly bad whipping, it was like a switch just flipped in Johnny's brain. He stopped crying, and he hardly even flinched. This only made his father more angry, and he proceeded to beat him even harder. One day, Johnny passed out when he was playing with his friends, and he was taken to the hospital, where they diagnosed him with a heart condition. And with that, it was official. John Wayne Gacy would never be an athlete. No matter how hard his father pushed him to play sports, he could not physically handle running without his heart just giving out. In 1954, Johnny joined the Boy Scouts, and he became good friends with a boy called Barry Bashelli. Johnny felt that he could trust Barry with his biggest secret. He stole a pair of panties and a bra from his mother's bedroom. When he was alone, he would dress up as a woman and stare at himself in the mirror. Sometimes he would put on lipstick and wonder if he really should have been born a girl. It was clear that Johnny was questioning his gender identity and his sexuality. It must have been obvious to the rest of his family, too, because John Sr. would often say that he would rather his son be dead than find out he was a homosexual. Even though his father was clearly abusive, Johnny was still desperate to be the son his father always wanted. He started to date girls and tried to have a normal life, but he was bullied in school for being overweight and having his heart condition. It would seem that no matter how hard he tried to suppress it, John Wayne Gacy could never fit into the world that he was born into. As soon as he graduated from high school, John Wayne Gacy was 18 years old, and he wanted to get as far away from his hometown as he possibly could. He moved to the city of Springfield, where he became a shoe salesman in a department store. After work, he became the assistant precinct captain for the Democratic Party. He started dating one of his co-workers, Marilyn Myers. Her father was wealthy and well-connected in Springfield politics. Gacy told his friends and family that someday he wanted to become the governor of Illinois, and maybe even the president of the United States. A few years later, he married Marilyn Myers, but he was far from a faithful partner. On the day Marilyn was in the hospital giving birth to their first child, John Wayne Gacy was at a bar with one of his male co-workers. They got drunk and went back to Gacy's house and had sex. Just a few hours later, his first child was born. John Sr. came to see his new grandchild, and for the first time in John Wayne Gacy's life, his father said that he was proud of him. John's new father-in-law owned several KFC restaurant franchises. At 24, he left his job selling shoes and became a manager of one of these restaurants. According to his best friend, Barry, Gary wanted the job very badly because he wanted to be able to control people. John Wayne Gacy continued to climb the ladder with local politics. He was always studying people around him and trying to figure out how he could make everyone like him. He built a full-service bar in the living room of his house, and he convinced his wife that they needed to throw swingers parties together. If you're not aware, this is where couples would show up and switch spouses for the night. This was popular back in the 1960s, since everyone was raving about the new free love movement. The Gacys were also known to host massive orgies in their home. These sex parties made John Wayne Gacy popular almost immediately, and he became the vice president of the local council. They also voted him as Man of the Year. At the time, homosexual men usually led double lives. Whenever they wanted to have gay sex, they would start cruising. Men would take a walk in the park or down a road late at night, waiting for another man to approach. They would have sex and often would never see one another again. However, since he was a public figure, it's possible that John Wayne Gacy thought that it would be too risky to have sex with any adult who might know who he is. He decided to go after people that he felt he could easily control. He invited a 15-year-old boy named Donald Voorhees over to his house. He knew Donald because he worked with his father, who was a local senator. Donald looked up to John like a cool older brother, and he offered to let Donald drink alcohol and see his porn collection. After the boy got drunk, he forced Donald to have oral sex with him. When it was over, Gacy threatened the boy by saying that he had connections with the mob. If he ever told anyone, he would send someone to kill him and his family. When Gacy dropped Donald Voorhees off at home, he gave him $50 in exchange for the boy's silence. Donald Voorhees kept that night a secret for a very long time, but he was never the same again. In 1968, he broke down and told his family what had happened when he was 15. John Wayne Gacy was arrested for sodomy. He swore that he did not do it and asked for a lie detector test. He was convinced that he could fool the test, but he ultimately failed. When he was called out on this lie, he tried to claim that the sex with Donald was consensual. Several other teenage boys then came forward to say that they had been raped by Gacy as well. He was found guilty, and he was sentenced to 10 years in prison. His wife divorced him, and she did not want him to see their children ever again. Now, this could have been the end of it all, but unfortunately, Gacy used his charm to schmooze his way into the hearts of everyone in the prison. Once he was behind bars, he made friends with other inmates as well as the guards. Since he had experience working at KFC, he was able to become the head chef in the kitchen. He received a lot of praise for knowing how to properly spice food, and he was even interviewed for a local television program called Christmas at Anamosa.
How long have you been here?
I've been here now a year and about 2 weeks.
Why am I asking, how long do you plan to take up residence here?
Well, I hope to be getting out sometime in May.
All of his father's fears, though, they'd come true. John Sr. died as soon as his son went to prison. John Wayne Gacy believed that his father, he died from shame. He became so angry that he lashed out his anger on any gay man he came into contact with. While in prison, he spotted two men having oral sex, so he bashed in one of the men's faces until it was bloody. Despite being found guilty for raping multiple boys, John Wayne Gacy was released after just 16 months on good behavior. He returned to Cook County, where he lived with his mum. People in his hometown, they didn't know about his conviction, and they just remembered him as a young and innocent boy, a fad kid with a heart condition. So it was very easy for him to get a fresh start in life. He found a job as a short order cook, and he saved up his money by working overtime. Once he had enough money, he started a construction company called PDM Contractors. He also jumped back into local politics. Newly divorced, Gary started dating a woman that he knew from high school called Carol Hoff. She was a divorcee with two daughters, and she was struggling to make it on welfare. John Wayne Gacy was great around kids, and he had a steady job, and was also ambitious. From Carol's perspective, he was a catch, and his daughters started to call him Daddy right away. He admitted to Carol that he was bisexual, but he never told her about his time in jail. She accepted him for who he was, and in that moment, He had everything. But he was never satisfied. In fact, he felt that he'd been in prison so long, his craving to have sex with teenage boys had only been amplified. One night, John Wayne Gacy was hanging out at the Greyhound bus station. He spotted a 16-year-old named Tim McCoy who was traveling during Christmas time and had a brief layover in Chicago. Gacy started flirting with him and offered to show him around the city. Tim must have assumed that this was just a typical cruising fling. They had sex, but Gacy was angry at himself for giving in to his homosexuality. He impulsively grabbed a kitchen knife and stabbed Tim in the chest multiple times. He buried the boy in the dirt basement crawl space underneath his house. Tim's parents never saw him for Christmas. Indeed, it would be years before they found out about the fate of their son. John Wayne Gacy got married to Carol 7 months later, and she moved into the house with her daughters. His new wife would have no idea that she was moving into a house where the remains of a young boy were buried right below her feet. John Wayne Gacy continued to suppress his homosexual urges. Instead of putting on lipstick, though, he started to paint his face in clown makeup. Normally, clowns have friendly, curved features, but Gacy painted on sharp, harsh edges. He called himself Pogo the Clown and started showing up at the local hospital to do magic tricks for the children who were sick. When he was Pogo, he could do all the things that John was not allowed to do. This escalated to giving in to his indulgences again, burying his victims in the basement. John's wife, Carol, was concerned because she could tell that his personality had drastically changed after he began to play Pogo. John refused to have sex with her, and he made her feel worthless. They filed for divorce in 1975 when he was 33 years old. After that, he was free to hunt teenage boys as often as he wanted. He would drive around town dressed in his full clown makeup. If he saw a boy walking alone at night, he would hold up a gun and force them into the car. He would rape and stab them before burying them again in the basement. Burying all of those bodies, it was hard work, so he brought in one of his new employees, David Cram, to dig holes in the basement. He claimed that he needed to add new piping under the house, but he was under strict orders to avoid certain areas of the basement. David had no idea that John Wayne Gacy was forcing him to dig his own grave. Cram was from out of town, and he told Gacy that he was looking for a new apartment. Gacy offered to rent him one of the bedrooms of his house in exchange for labor. One night, though, Pogo the Clown walked through the door, and David Cram was confused. John was already drunk, and his makeup was sliding off his face. He wasn't acting like John anymore. He spoke in a nasally, high-pitched voice like a clown and asked David if he wanted a Mai Tai. David laughed and assumed that this was some kind of joke, so he agreed to drinks. Pogo asked if he would like to see a magic trick, and he put handcuffs on David's wrists. He dangled the key in front of him, giggling like a child. Pogo the Clown then started poking David, saying, "Does this get you mad? What about this, huh? Huh?" David then threatened to punch him if he didn't stop, but Gacy never broke character. In the middle of a sentence, Pogo started growling and barking like a dog. Then he started saying in a sing-songy voice, "I'm going to rape you," over and over. He tried to force David down onto the floor, attempting to rip off his pants. David kicked Gacy as hard as he could, and the clown fell to the floor, dropping the key to the handcuffs. David was able to escape from the house, but he never spoke a word of this incident to anyone until many years later. Others, though, they wouldn't be so lucky to escape. John Wayne Gacy's last known victim was a 15-year-old named Robert Peast who worked at a Des Plaines pharmacy. Gacy had spotted the boy on a previous shopping trip, so he showed up at the pharmacy asking to speak to the owner. He offered to renovate their pharmacy and casually asked if he knew of any teenage boys who were looking for a job because he was willing to pay $5 an hour for construction work. Robert Peast took the bait. This was double what he made at the pharmacy, so he called up Gacy's company to apply. Later, as he left the house, Peast's mother asked him where he was going. He said, "Some contractor wants to talk to me about a job," and he left. His mother never saw her son again. At this point, Gacy had run out of room in his basement. There were already 27 corpses beneath his house. So Pogo the Clown, he had to dump Robert's body in the river. When the police found Robert's body, it was easy for them to take testimonies and connect the dots. They approached John Wayne Gacy, but he was confident that he would not be caught. He even invited the investigators over to his house for dinner and drinks. One of the officials could smell the stench of rotting corpses coming up through the air vents. They came back with another warrant and uncovered the bodies of the teenage boys in the basement. When John Wayne Gacy was brought into custody, the police were preparing to take his mugshot. They were asking him basic information like his name and his birth date. An officer asked him, "Where were you born?" Gacy replied, "Out of chaos." He started to laugh at his own joke. The camera flashed at that very moment, capturing the image of a murderer who was truly pleased with himself. When they found the bodies, Gacy knew that he was done. He quickly claimed that he had multiple personality disorder and that he had no control over what Pogo the Clown did. But clearly, he had planned Robert Peast's murder for a long time. After a psychological evaluation, it was obvious to anyone that he was just trying to plead insanity, but that he seemed to be fully aware of what he was doing. During his trial, Gacy had the best defense team anyone could ask for because of his ties to local government. When he received the death penalty, he actually congratulated his team, as this was the result he wanted all along. While in prison, John Wayne Gacy began to draw pictures of clowns and sold his artwork. During every interview he did behind bars, Gacy claimed that he was innocent and refused to take blame for any of his actions. At one point, he even decided to write a book where he claimed that the bodies in his basement were part of a setup to ruin his political career. May the 10th, 1994 was the day of his execution. Crowds of people stood outside the prison chanting, "Kill him! Kill him!" while holding up signs. When it was announced that he had died from lethal injection, the crowds cheered. Immediately following his death, forensic psychologists dissected Gacy's body and removed his brain. They wanted to see if there were any abnormalities that might give them some kind of clue as to why he had become a serial killer, but there was nothing to be found. Even to this day, experts are still debating on how to diagnose John Wayne Gacy. He has been called a sociopath, a psychopath, a paranoid schizophrenic, and some have agreed with his self-diagnosis of dissociative identity disorder. What we know for sure, though, is that if it were not for all the shame he endured all his life, these killings may never have happened in the first place. So I really hope you enjoyed that episode of the Biographics Podcast. Please do consider heading over to wherever you get your podcasts and leaving us a review. It does make a big difference. It gets this podcast in front of more people. So if you do that, I would greatly appreciate it. And I'll see you next time.